Life around the American dining table may get even more Brazilian. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. You may know that many of the beers you drink are produced by a Belgian-Brazilian conglomerate known as Anheuser-Busch InBev. There's word just now that Heinz, of ketchup fame, is merging with Kraft, of mac and cheese, Jell-O, Oscar Mayer, and Philadelphia cream cheese fame. The Brazilian angle here at the center of this estimated $40 billion deal is a Brazilian private equity fund known as 3G Capital that already controls Heinz. To help us navigate this stew of brands, is the BBC's Jonathan Frewin. Morning, Jonathan.
Morning, David.
So tell me more about this 3G.
Well, it's the biggest private equity company in the world that you've probably never heard of, a Brazilian company. It teamed up with Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway to buy Heinz, as you were mentioning, all 57 varieties. It also controls Burger King. Now, one of the key people at 3G is Jorge Paulo Limon. He's apparently Brazil's richest man, a Swiss-Brazilian who, as you mentioned, was behind the creation of the world's biggest brewing company, Anheuser-Busch InBev. So the private equity house clearly loves big brands. They're seen as experts in both groceries and what some people call quick-service food restaurants, fast food joints to you and me.
All right, what's the logic behind this deal, however?
Clearly, 3G, or Heinz, reckons it can do a better job of running the company than the current management. Perhaps slim it down, increase the profits, just like any big private equity buyout. I've seen reports that 3G only has about $10 billion of the $40 billion needed to buy Kraft, but clearly, teaming up with Warren Buffett, they can put the cash together. So we don't know what the ownership structure will be, but it's a huge deal for Brazil, if you think about it.
All right. The BBC's Jonathan Frewin in London. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
You should note that many brands that you associate with Kraft, such as Oreos, Tang, and Triscuit, are now part of Mondelez International and therefore not part of today's deal. The parent company of the University of Phoenix, the country's biggest for-profit college, reveals its quarterly profits today. Apollo Education Group has been regrouping in the face of declining enrollment. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
For-profit colleges are attracting fewer students as the economy improves. Companies have also scaled back to head off new regulations aimed at shutting down failing programs. But Wells Fargo analyst Trace Urden says the bigger threat to Apollo these days is competition.
They're losing share primarily to traditional colleges that have moved online over the past couple of years.
Big names like Arizona State and Southern New Hampshire University have bet heavily on online education. Brian Fleming tracks the market for EduVentures.
These institutions have really come to take on the look and feel and even the market behaviors and strategies of many large for-profits.
Like aggressively recruiting working adults and tailoring programs to meet employers' needs. Fleming says traditional universities have some advantages. In the case of Arizona State, a strong brand that comes with tenured professors and a football team. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Radio Shack is bankrupt and on the auction block. Sources tell Reuters that a hedge fund called Standard General has just increased its bid for 1,700 stores to about $165 million. It's bidding against liquidators that would sell off the remaining inventory, store fixtures, and real estate. Now, if Standard General wins, the idea is a partnership with Sprint to sell phones and phone plans. It's worth at this juncture to ask ourselves, how did it come to this? Heather Landy is the global news editor for Quartz and has been digging into the sad demise of the Shack. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I was looking at this advertisement from a newspaper from 1991 that somebody posted. It was for Radio Shack, right? And it was listing for sale back in 1991 a portable CD player, pocket calculator, VHS camcorder, mobile cell phone. And the person who posted this smartly quipped, "Everything from the ad is now in your smartphone." I mean, this is, I guess, part of what Radio Shack ran into.
That was a very big part of it. This company has been cursed for a while now of just being in sort of the wrong place at the wrong time or not being in the right place at the right time. Even though they'd been very aggressive on flip phones, they were very late to the scene on the Apple iPhone, for example. And it took them a long time to recover from that, and in a way they never did.
And I'll tell you, I have a special spot in my heart for Radio Shack.
A lot of people do.
I was one of those tinkerers, and when I needed an emergency capacitor or a resistor, they would have that. Now, I know you can get it online now, but that started to get relegated to a tiny corner of the store, and often there wasn't a lot of electronics expertise when you walked into one.
Yeah, there wasn't. For a time, especially in the 90s and aughts, there weren't too many tinkerers left. There are now. It's a growing movement, right? The maker movement.
Well, that's the other possible missed opportunity. If they could have stayed alive, maybe it could have been your one-stop shop for 3D printing or for if you're making something with your hands and Home Depot and Lowe's wasn't going to do it.
And I think that's the direction that they were heading in, and they ran out of time.
And I've been focusing on, did they get the right merchandise? Did they have the right people in stores? But there was something else profound behind the end game that we've seen with Radio Shack.
It wasn't just the merchandising. That was a problem for sure. But in the end, what they really seemed to be hamstrung by was a loan agreement that they made in 2013 that stipulated that they could not close more than 200 stores a year. So in the end, it was in a way debt, or at least the terms on their debt, that I think really put the nail in the coffin for them.
Heather Landy wrote about the demise of Radio Shack in Quartz. She is global news editor for the online publication. Ms. Landy, thank you.
Thank you.
And Politico was first to report that newly announced Republican presidential candidate Ted Cruz is going on Obamacare. His wife is taking unpaid leave from Goldman Sachs to work on the Cruz campaign. And how long can you pay for Cobra to keep the old coverage going, after all? It's in the news because the Texas congressman is one of Obamacare's most intense critics. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.